Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's absolutely wonderful to have your company for another episode of the show. Now this episode forms part of our summer series, and during the summer series, what we've been doing is taking snippets of different episodes and stitching them together around a particular theme. And the theme for this particular episode is all around wealth creation. And I really believe that creating wealth is a very important thing for dentists to think about, because ultimately wealth is what gives you freedom, it's what gives you choice. And in Savvy Dentist, we talk about creating multi-generational wealth so that the wealth you create has an impact beyond yourself. It impacts your family, it impacts your friends, it impacts the community of which you're part. And so it's like dropping that pebble in the pond, the ripple effect extends way beyond yourself. When it comes to creating wealth, I think it's really important to understand a few key elements that go into that, which I'll get to in just a second. But before I do, I want to make a clear point, and that is I don't hold a financial services license. And when you're looking at wealth creation, you really do need to get good advice from an appropriately qualified professional. Now, that said, this episode and the pieces that we share with you are designed to force you to think, to force you to plan, to force you to examine your values and beliefs in ways that perhaps you may not have done up until now. So during this episode, we're going to talk about firstly creating your wealth plan. And if you think about a wealth plan, you've got to know where you are and where you want to get to and understand how to close that gap. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to be talking about the business, your practice, as the engine that drives your wealth from both a cash flow point of view, but from the point of view of creating a valuable business. And it's really important to understand that there's lots of latent value in your business, and we want to know how to actually maximize that. Of course, as you're driving your engine, you want to make sure you've got the best mindset around money. We've got to make sure that we have healthy belief systems and values around money, because it's one thing to say, I want to create wealth, but if we're self-sabotaging with our values and beliefs, it's like trying to drive with the handbrake on. And of course, we then want to have some strategies along the way to help us do the very specific things that help us create wealth. So as I said, this episode is designed to help you to think, to plan, and to examine your internal belief structures around wealth so that you can then talk to your particular advisors and map out these thoughts and chart a course to your financial goals, your financial future, that gives you the ultimate freedom, the ultimate flexibility to live life on your terms. So without any further ado, here's our summer series edition on the topic of wealth creation.
Most people and most of my friends and most, if not all of the people I grew up with, they're just doing the same stuff over and over and over. Whatever was modeled for them by their parents, whatever's around them and by their friends or the people they hang out with, that's the rut or the thinking or the direction that they fall into. But for those that decide to make those changes in those moments where they maybe have too much pain, they start to develop a vision that's different than maybe what they grew up with. And that's the key moment, because for me, I developed a vision, said, hey, I believe I can be a millionaire. That's my vision, right? I can be a millionaire by the time I'm 40. And I thought I was really special, Jesse, until I met all these young guys and girls who've done it by the time they're like 25 and 30 years old. Yeah. And so I realized I'm not that special. I'm just another guy and I'm kind of average, right? There's nothing really that special about me other than I made this choice. Now, for some people, like, in the Dave Ramsey era that I grew up in, Dave is helping people with their vision, and he's giving them a vision of becoming debt free. Mm-hmm. So they can't see, if you're hurting with money and you're not managing money, you can't pay your bills like your mom was. She can't possibly imagine being a millionaire. It's too far. The jump is too big, right? But she could possibly latch onto a vision like, oh, I want a house. That's a vision. Or, oh, I don't want to live in this financial pain anymore. What can I do differently? That's a vision, right? So you're developing a vision. It's not as grand as becoming a millionaire, but it is a step along that path. And so for me, when I made my choice, I came up with, basically a three-pronged change that I shifted, three changes I implemented. And it was very simple. Instead of spending my $3,000 a month and spending money on credit cards, I said, no, we're going to reverse that flow. We're going to get my money flowing in a better direction, because right now all my money is flowing away from me. So let's just reverse the flow. So what I did is I said, you know what? Instead of living and spending $4,000 a month, I'm going to live on $1,000 a month. And that's what I'm going to live on. And then I'm going to take $1,000 and pay off debt, which at that point I had a little bit of credit card debt, about $2,000 or $3,000, and about $13,000 on a car note. And I'm going to put $1,000 a month towards that. So it took me about 16 months to pay that off, because I was very aggressively paying on. And then I took about $1,000 and made investments. And my investment strategy back then was pretty simple. It was about $500 a month into mutual funds and $500 a month into stock investments. And I was doing more like tech stock investments. That was all my plan was at that point. Now, today I'm much smarter because I've got another 25 years of learning that I've done. But that is all it took for me to get started and get going in the right direction and to become a millionaire. And at 25 year old, right? So a lot of times we discount youth, you know, older people discount youth. But the reality is you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out how to build some wealth. You just have to, you know, follow the principles, implement the strategies, have some self-discipline. And, you know, there's a couple set things that you have to do, and it kind of naturally occurs. You don't have to be greedy. That's another thing people think. You got to be like chasing money or be greedy. You don't. It's just a set process, set behavior patterns, and then this wealth will, you know, naturally occur.
It's really interesting, you know, when you spoke about reversing the flow of money, it sounds like, when you said, you know, I'm going to live off $1,000 a month, I'm going to invest $1,000 a month, I'm going to pay down my debt aggressively with the third $1,000 a month. What's really interesting is you've set that strategy, you've set that, it's almost like a game to yourself, right? How can I live on $1,000 a month, right? How do I become clever about this? How can I make that work? And I remember really interestingly, this is going back, I'm dating myself, I think it was 1996. but in 1996, I remember in my wallet, I had, you know, when you open up your wallet and you've got a photo of your driver's license, I remember I took my driver's license out of there and I put it somewhere else. But in the place of that, I put my savings target in there. So every time I opened up my wallet, I'd play a game with myself and going, oh, do I really need this? Or do I think I just close my wallet and think about it for a little while longer? And if I really want it, I'll come back and get it. But maybe after a while, the impetus for that will pass and I realize I don't want it. And I think for me, making a game of that and seeing how you can do that is really important. And I'm curious, what were the sort of things you did to live on $1,000 a month? Because you've basically living on a third of your income at the time. And yes, the numbers change these days. You'd be earning more than $39,000 and all that sort of stuff. But it's still an interesting thought process. So I'm curious, how did you play that game with yourself?
Yeah, I think for me, I just quit spending everything. I mean, it was like, don't go buy electronics. I didn't need a new stereo every month. I didn't need a new set of, you know, $1,000 speakers. I just stopped chasing stuff. And I'm just like, I don't need that. I don't need it. I filled my time up with other things that I didn't need to spend money on, because that's part of it is, you know, idle hands kind of go find things to do, right? So I filled my time up with, you know, activities like soccer. I worked on cars. I played games. Unfortunately, I started playing video game habit in my 20s, but it kept me from going out and spending a bunch of money because my time was getting sucked up with other things. And I learned a lot. Like I read a lot of magazines, a lot of computer books and stuff. So I learned a lot. And, you know, that's a key element in your behavior pattern. What you're talking about is changing behavior patterns, Jesse. And one of those for me was you got to change a behavior pattern. You got to become a lifelong learner. And you either have to learn a skill that actually, you know, pays dividends for you long term, or you learn financial investment strategies. And you have to learn this stuff consistently over time.
I read a stat the other day that somewhere around 50% or less of businesses that are ever started ultimately get sold. And that got me thinking. And I was thinking about the fact that for every business, there's kind of one of two outcomes. Either it gets sold eventually or it closes down. And I wanted to ask you, firstly, what is the real stat there? I don't know if that's a hard stat or an accurate stat. But if that stat is remotely accurate, why is it that so many businesses never get to the point of being sold?
Yeah, I think the stat I've seen for North America is that 50% of businesses never celebrate their fifth birthday, meaning they go out of business. And that may be akin to similarly that they don't ever sell. Most of them, of course, go out of business for lots of reasons, lack of capital, they miss the idea, et cetera. I'd imagine the dental practices, just because of the difficulty of getting into a dental practice, would be much lower. I would imagine most dental practices are successful. They're run by obviously very smart individuals, and there's a lot of capital that goes into them. So I would imagine that they achieve that. But I would also agree that a lot probably shut down without selling. And usually that's because effectively they're set up, although they are legally incorporated businesses generally, they're effectively set up as jobs for the dentist themselves. And so when the dentist wants to leave, there's nothing really to transfer other than maybe the chairs and a little bit of equipment. That's the downside of building a business that's dependent on you as a practitioner, right? There's no transferability. When you think about it, an acquirer looking at the business will just say, well, there's nothing really there. And maybe you could say, well, there's a customer list or a patient list. And yeah, to some extent that might be true. But if the loyalty accrues to you as a dentist, then that customer list is of questionable value. So there's a lot of problems with being in the center point of your dental practice. And that's really what the book is about, is how do you transfer an owner-operated business, one where the owner is the practitioner, to a company that can thrive without the owner. And that's really the ultimate, right? Because you could sell, but you don't have to sell at that point. You could create some passive income. You could bring in a junior dentist and hive off some of the profits, et cetera. You've got options at that point.
It's a really interesting conversation. And obviously in your value builder system, you talk about eight factors that really create enterprise value. And I know we are going to talk about exiting, but I guess if we're going to think about exiting, we want to obviously have a business that has value in the marketplace as well. And as you quite rightly point out, we want to always build it to sell and have the choice of whether we do, whether we don't, when we do, when we don't, and so on and so forth. So before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of an elegant exit, I'm wondering if you can just walk me through a couple of those parts of the value builder system that you think are going to be really relevant to dental practices. You've already touched on that key person dependency, which is huge in the work that we do. You know, a lot of the work we do is about trying to minimize that. And of course, yeah, when you minimize that, you minimize risk and so on. But what else do you see as the key drivers of enterprise value within, I suppose, a boutique practice like that or a service-based industry? And of course, that's going to be the same in dentistry as it might be for a medical practice or an accountancy firm or even a legal firm. What sort of things do you see?
Yeah, look, I mean, let's be clear. Financial performance of the dental practice, top line turnover, yep, revenue, and bottom line profit is going to be essential. Think of a valuation. I'm going to distill valuation down to valuation consultants would cringe at me saying this, but essentially you could think of valuation as what multiple, yeah, of your profit is a buyer willing to pay. And so there's two numbers you can manipulate there. One is, yeah, your profit and the other is your multiple. Yeah. Most dentists will say, great, I can jack up my profit, and they'll spend all their time, how do I lower my cost of goods and how do I increase my rates and can I nudge up my cost for a filling from five, you know, whatever. That, I think, is one approach. The other approach is to really focus on the multiple itself.
Yeah.
And the multiple is determined by the drivers that you reference. So one of them, obviously, is going to be key person dependency. We call it hub and spoke, but effectively how well your business would perform without you doing the work. That's a big driver. Another one that may be a little bit less intuitive, and particularly in the dental practice space, would be monopoly control, wherein, and Warren Buffett talks a lot about this, talks about the idea that he invests in businesses with a competitive moat around them. And when he gets asked, like, what do you mean by a competitive moat? It's basically your competitive protection. And when you've got a thick and wide competitive protection, that enables you to have pricing authority to some extent. You can charge what you want, and therefore you overall build a more profitable business. Now, when you come back to, well, how do you create a competitive moat? On one hand, it's some sort of invention. It's pretty rare in a dental practice to have something, sure, totally unique. But the other piece is marketing. How well you distinguish or differentiate your dental practice from the one down the street. Everybody thinks they know what a dentist does, I think. You can tell me if I'm wrong. But if you create a point of differentiation that makes your practice unique, and a certain way you serve customers or a certain way you approach the experience, and you codify that, you trademark that, you build that as your defining or distinct competitive advantage, that becomes a competitive moat. And I think that's another of one of the other eight drivers that I think, again, in a dental practice is probably not the most intuitive, but I think it could actually play a significant role in the value of a dental practice.
People will probably be thinking, well, how much education? What's a reasonable amount? Do I need to totally shift my focus on this? Or can I do this by reading on the weekend? Or is it something I need to do more than that?
Let me give you an interesting statistic. I was recently asked by a journalist, how long does it take to become financially independent through property? And I think I disappointed her when I said 30 years. I think she was hoping it would be quickly. So first of all, it's a long-term process. There's no get-rich-quick schemes, because if there are, you're going to get caught out. And I know dentists get barraged by people saying, I've got a great property for you. Why don't I get into Bitcoin? Why not get into gold? No, don't do that. So first of all, you've got to understand a little bit about finance and know the right questions to ask. But you can speed up the learning process by getting mentors. You can speed up the learning process of how to run a professional practice, dental practice, by having a coach like Jesse Green help you. If you're the smartest person in your team, you're in trouble, Jesse. So just like they have a coach to help run the business, somebody who sees their blind spots, somebody who tells them what to do, but somebody who's got their interest at heart, not a vested interest trying to sell property or sell structures or super funds or things like that. You can speed up the learning process by standing on the shoulders of your mentors. But you've actually got to – dentists tend to get, excuse the expression, sucked in. They tend to believe people. So they're more likely, if somebody says, hey, I got this great investment thing. Oh, I'm so busy. Yeah, just go ahead and do it for me. They can get into trouble. So you've got to know what's real, what's realistic, and you've also got to know the right questions to ask. Mm-hmm. So how long does it take? Well, it should be fun also, but one of the other rich habits that you're asking me what some of the habits are, is that a lot of wealthy people get up early and join, you may have heard of the 4 a.m. club or the 5 a.m. club, and they spend an hour or two before they go to their professional practice, before their wife and kids get up, working on themselves. It's a really good time to do it. It's a common habit we see amongst rich and successful people. Oh, now, wow. May I quickly say, before people listen to this and say, oh, you don't have to be rich to be successful. No, you don't. We're talking about money here because you're asking me about that, but it's not a judge of people, and you don't have to be. Obviously, we see a lot of successful people who aren't rich, and definitely see rich people who aren't successful, who aren't happy. But Jesse, I learned a long time ago, any problem money can solve isn't really a problem. Mm. So it actually gets rid of a whole lot of issues, a whole lot of problems, and it lets you enjoy your life, it lets you spend time with your family and your kids.
Yeah, I love that. And you're absolutely right. We see that as well, in the sense that we see a lot of people who make a lot of money, and in all candor, they're not as happy as they could be. And one of the things, Michael, we talk about in the coaching that we do is we talk about different currencies, money, time, and meaning. And if you don't have the meaning piece or the happiness piece in there, the other two become a little redundant. So I really, really resonate with that.
I love to hear that. So when I talk about wealth, true wealth is not just money. It's money plus. You need to have your health. You need to actually be able to enjoy and appreciate it. You need to have somebody to love and somebody to love you and somebody you feel comfortable with. I think that's really, really important. To me, true wealth is money plus relationships, money plus growth. I still believe you need to learn, grow, improve. You need to contribute. You need to give back to the community. You need time too. You can't just be rushed the whole time. So true wealth is much, much more than money, I concur. Yeah.
What is it about dentistry, do you think, given that you know the industry so well, that makes it imperative for dentists to start thinking about creating wealth outside of the practice to develop a passive income? What is it about dentistry and dentists that makes that such an imperative, do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think, Jesse, you just hit on that is, right, they show up, they work really hard, they go home, rinse, wash, repeat. And, you know, when you think about the life of a dentist, so, and I love dentistry. I think it's one of the greatest professions on the face of this planet where you can have a massive impact. And have a fantastic quality of life. But right, pull back to the days of dental school, right? You come out, and at least here in America, you come out with a lot of debt, right? You owe a lot of money. Most people do. And so you show up, you start working, you start paying that debt down. And then, you know, maybe you start making a little money and you think, well, I need to reward myself more. And so your lifestyle creeps as your income goes up too. And I'm not saying you have to not enjoy things, but that's kind of the challenge that a lot of us face, is that we're starting life in debt. We start making a lot of money and we just kind of show up and we live life and we don't really have an end in mind. And so like Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. And if you do that, and if you really focus on where you're trying to go, you're going to get a lot better results.
So I really love that begin with the end in mind, because that's actually one of the mantras of my life, actually. Tim, you've hit on something really near and dear to my heart. And I think when it comes to the end in mind, obviously the definition of success is going to be individual. Each person's going to have their own version of what that looks like. But just in broad terms, for most people in dentistry who don't plan, my experience is that the end in mind is they're at the end of their practicing life, they have to sell their practice for a lot of money because they've either got a clear debt or they're using that money to set up their retirement. And of course, in today's world, who knows what they'll be able to do with that practice? Will they be able to sell it at all? Probably, but will it be for the right amount of money? So I guess my question for you around that is, when we're thinking about the end in mind, without necessarily putting hard numbers to it, what does a successful retirement look like? Because for most people, it's a long way off, or for most people listening to this podcast, at least, it's a long way off. And it's hard to picture that because it's just not part of our day-to-day thinking at the present. So what does it look like?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, what I hear often, because I'm always asking that question, right? I ask my clients, I ask other potential clients as I'm lecturing, I'm always asking dentists, what does success look like to you? And the thing I hear time and time again is this concept of work being optional, is reaching a point where you can show up and do dentistry because that's what you want to do. You've created a practice that's a reflection of your vision, your values, and you're truly going to work because you want to, not because you have to. And those are very different mentalities, right? There's something that happens when you have to show up at work because you got to pay the bills, because you're struggling to make the practice work, versus reaching a point where you've got some financial security and you're able to show up and work because you want. And so that's, I know it's kind of general, but that's what I hear time and time again. And that looks different for everyone, but that seems to be the commonality, is making work optional.
I actually think it might be a generality, but I think it's a really common phrase that I hear as well, Tim. I hear that almost every day. I want to come to work because I enjoy the work. And most dentists I know actually really enjoy the craft of dentistry. Most dentists I know enjoy looking after their patients and having an impact on their lives. But equally, most of them also like to do it in a way that makes sense for them as well. In other words, as you said quite eloquently, they get to choose to do it rather than having to do it. And I think that as you quite rightly point out, there's a very different energy around that. And I think if you have the choice to do things, then you show up as your best self every single day because it is a choice. And I really love that. So if we understand that the end goal is then to have more choice in life, and we understand that the end goal is to have that option, why is it that some people just don't think about creating wealth outside of the practice? We've spoken about the busyness of the day-to-day. We understand that. But are there any other things that stop people either thinking about creating wealth or any other impediments to actually achieving that wealth? Where do people go wrong?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to it's the mindset, right? It's where are we? And right, to kind of use an analogy of dental health, right? I'm not a dentist. I work with a whole bunch of them, but I don't know what's going on inside my mouth. That's why I show up for regular cleanings. And that's why I'm always in the dentist chair, is because I want to catch those problems before they become really big problems. Mm. And once again, right, I'm not trained to do that, but there is someone who does do that, someone who helps guide me along. And I think it's very similar for most dentists too, is they're not really assessing what progress they're making towards their goals, and they don't know how to measure these things because no one's ever taught them, or they've never really took time to think about, wait, where am I heading, other than just showing up, doing dentistry, and then hopefully finishing all my lab work so I can get home and go to sleep and do it all again.
Yeah, totally. I think you've just described a day in the life of a lot of dentists right there, Tim. So,
right, we get trapped on a treadmill, and we're running, 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 and we never try to think, well, wait, why am I on this treadmill?
Yeah. And I think that's exactly right because, and look, to be honest with you, in the early stages of my career, I was doing that too. I was pedaling really hard to just keep running, keep up with everything. And all of a sudden you look up and 5 years has gone by and you think, wow. And you know that because your kids are 5 years older. You've got a bit more gray hair. Well, you don't have much. I can see. I've got plenty, but 5 years goes by in the blink of an eye. But equally, I heard a great saying that compounding waits for no man. So that's 5 years of lost opportunity potentially. So I guess coming back to that, if there's someone listening to this podcast and says, oh my goodness, me, Tim, I totally understand what you're saying. I know that I need to start thinking about creating another income stream outside of my practice, whether or not I own the practice or whether I'm working as an associate dentist for someone else, it doesn't really matter too much at the moment. But for anyone listening, what's the first step that people need to take to start that journey?
Yeah, so I would say that the first step is to actually celebrate that they've reached the point of making that decision. And that's what we so often forget, right? You talk about that person who's waited 5 years and then they finally wake up and they're like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Well, that's great. You're awake. Mm. And now you've made that decision. And that's when the victory is won. It is the victory, right? I go back to, you know, marathon runners or Olympic athletes, right? They win that race, not at the moment that they actually cross that finish line and get the gold medal. They won that race years ago when they made the decision to start working for it. And the same is true with all the dentists out there in our audience that we're talking to is, number one, realize your victory is won when you make the choice to start working for it. So celebrate that you're awake now. And then start getting really clear on what does that future look like. And find some professionals, talk to your existing team of people, and share your vision with them and ask them, how can you help me get there?
Hey there, I really hope you enjoyed that episode from the summer series. I hope you took some great notes, but most importantly, I hope you apply what you learned as a result of listening to the guests on the show. Now, if you want to set up your next 12 months to be the most successful ever, then I'm going to encourage you to think about putting a strategic plan in place. No matter what your definition of success is, it's going to be important that you have a plan. So whether you want to increase your revenue, whether you want to enhance your profitability, whether you want to have more free time for better work-life balance, maybe you want to have fuller appointment books with better marketing, or maybe it's about having your team perform at a higher level than ever before so that your experiences for your patients are better, you're able to delegate more effectively, whatever it is for you, having the right plan in place is going to be really critical. One of the things that we know at Savvy is that the stages of growth of a business are absolutely predictable. And what that means is that the challenges encountered at any particular level of growth are really predictable, as are the solutions. We've worked with literally, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of practices over the years, and we've been able to help them achieve their business goals, their personal goals, and everything in between. But it all starts with having the right plan in place. One of the skills that we've developed is the ability to identify very clearly what the right next thing is to focus on. And so as you embark on the next 12 months, it's going to be really important that you identify what the right next thing is for you. Yeah, and that's going to depend on where you are now and what your goals and ambitions are as well. And once you've identified what the right next thing or things are, it's important to identify, well, what are the potential obstacles? What are the things that could derail us? And then, of course, have a mitigation plan around that so that as you progress through the year, you can make that progress, hit those goals, achieve the milestones that are important to you. And as I said, make sure that this 12 months is the most successful ever. Now, if you would like a hand putting that plan together, could I encourage you to book a practice growth call with one of our team? All you need to do is head across to savvydentist.com/growth call. One of our team will reach out to you and book that time. Now, during that call, they're going to be asking some questions about what's the current state of play in your practice, what your goals and ambitions are for the next 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and so on, so that they can align your thinking, align your resources to achieving not just the 1 year goals, but the 3 year, the 5 year, and the 10 year goals as well, so that you're setting yourself up for a fantastic future. As I said, whether it's around revenue growth, profit growth, leverage for, you know, greater free time, whatever it might be for you, that's really, really important because ultimately what we want to create is a practice and a life that you love. And getting that right plan in place is a really critical and essential first step for that. So all you need to do is head across to savvydentist.com/growth call and book that time. And we look forward to talking to you very, very shortly. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.